Turn to Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon is like a treasure chest filled with spiritual meaning, spiritual beauty, spiritual riches. For the most part, it's overlooked, misunderstood, certainly misrepresented. It is a song, just as its title says. It is a drama or a story told in song. The intent of the song is to represent, to illustrate, to portray the truth. In the song, there are two main characters, a woman and a man, or you can look at it as a bride and a bridegroom. This man, this woman, this bride and bridegroom, throughout the various scenes of the song, are in love, and they are interacting with one another, expressing their feelings, expressing their love, expressing their desire, their appreciation for each other. So it's a love song. It is a love song. Throughout the song, these two, this man, this woman, are synchronized with one another. And I believe that Song of Solomon is first and foremost a song that portrays the special love relationship between Christ and His bride, the church that Jesus organized during His earthly ministry. So Song of Solomon is a story. It is a song of love between these two. But you can also view Song of Solomon as a photo album. It paints beautiful word pictures of this man and this woman in love. Pictures, of course, reveal history. Pictures serve as a reminder. Pictures tell a story. Pictures provide information. Pictures provide proof. Pictures can be very instructive. They can captivate our attention. Pictures can arouse emotions as well. This morning, we want to view our text, or Song of Solomon, has a thousands-year-old photo album. And as you look through this photo album, we come to this picture. In Song of Solomon 8, in verse 5, "Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved?" It paints a picture. So if you were to view this book as a photo album, you're going through it, and now you come to this picture. It is a picture of the woman who is seen throughout the photo album, and she is coming up out of the wilderness, and she's leaning upon the man that is seen throughout the photo album. The context of what we read here is found in verse 3. The woman expresses her desire to be in the embrace of her beloved. And then in verse 4, she admonishes the daughters of Jerusalem, which prompted them to ask the question of our text, "Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness leaning upon her beloved?" And their question paints a beautiful and telling picture. We want to take a close and detailed look at the picture. And I pray that we can see ourselves individually and collectively as a church. We've preached from this passage here. We've preached from this passage in many a revival meeting, church anniversary services, etc. But this is a beautiful picture. It's a very telling picture. So we want to look first of all at the setting. A picture must have a setting. So we want to look at the setting of the picture. Again, the main focus of the picture is these two people, a particular woman and her beloved. But as you look at the picture, we see that it is set in wilderness. And this is a very apt description of the world in which we live. It is the place where we have been placed and called to serve God. It is the place where we are to continue in the truth. The wilderness is pictured throughout the Word of God. It's a place of tribulation. It's a place under the dominion of Satan. It is the very embodiment of Satan's spirit. It bears his image, the world. The world, pictured by this wilderness, is the sphere of rebellion against God. It is a place that is ignorant of God. It is a place where the enemies and the haters and the despisers of God dwell. It is a place where hell's crowd attempt to carry out the programs and agenda of Satan. It is a place of Antichrist spirit. Those in the wilderness view Christ as an offense, as an annoyance, an inconvenience, an irritation. Christ irritates a lot of folks, even religious folks. They view Christ as a problem, an aggravation, and therefore they seek to eliminate him from every aspect of life, attempting to suffocate us with that which is not of God. The wilderness is a place that prefers Barabbas to Christ. It is a place of depravity. It is a place of vileness. It is a place of wickedness and ungodliness. It is a place of abomination and blasphemy and heresy. It is a place of spiritual contamination. It is a place of poison. It is a place of irreverence toward God. And it is a place that is very provocative to God. Now today, we are able to enlarge photos on our phones. And that enables us to see more details. It enables us to see things that perhaps you would not see if you did not enlarge it. And as you look at the details, if you could enlarge this picture and look at the details of this wilderness, you would see that there are many people in this wilderness, not just this woman and this man. And as you look real close, you would see that they are a people that have been duped and enslaved by a humanistic, diabolical, immoral, perverted, and permissive way of life. As you look at the details of the wilderness, you see all these people, and they are willing to sell themselves to the wilderness, to that way of life. And they sacrificed their children upon the altars leading to such a life. And as you look at the details of this wilderness, you see that this people is drawn to idolatry. They're drawn to adultery and fornication, and nakedness and sodomy, and perversion, and hatred, and murder, and lying, cheating, stealing. As you look at the details of this wilderness, you see the masses. They're trying to redefine sin. They're trying to justify and minimize sin. And there's a place where evil is exalted, and biblical standards are being mocked. Looking at the details, you see a brainwashed people. These people believe that they must be tolerant and accepting and accommodating and embracing of that which is abomination to God. As you look at the details, you see a society spellbound with modern day sorcery, looking for solutions and answers where they will not find solutions and answers. Looking at the details of this wilderness, you will notice that the wilderness has been stripped. It's bare. It is a picture of a society that has been stripped of a recognition of God, stripped of biblical values, biblical morality, integrity, sanity, and common sense. The land's been stripped. Looking at the details of the wilderness, you would see that there are ruins everywhere. The ruins of government, the ruins of courts and schools and families and marriages and homes and lives. As you look real close, you'll see a people walking around with a ball and chain, living lives of enslavement and emptiness. As you look at this picture, you see religions void of truth. As you look at the picture, it's very dark. It's very dark. It's the 11th hour. And everything in this wilderness is intensifying by the day. So looking at this wilderness, I see a place of wandering. I see a place of despair. I see innumerable pitfalls and traps and snags. It's a place where you can very easily become maimed and trapped. It is a place of many obstacles. It is a place of spiritual desolation, a place of spiritual dilemma. It's a place of trouble. Place of distress and difficulty. Place of strain and misery and suffering and sorrow and pain. So looking at the details, we see Romans 1. As you look at the details of this wilderness, if you've been attending Sunday school, you know what I'm talking about when I say Romans 1. You see Romans 1. This wilderness serves as a reminder of where Home Baptist Church has been placed throughout her history, up to the present and into the future until Jesus comes. So we see the setting of this picture. Next, we want to see the woman in the portrait. There is a woman. She's an elect lady. She's someone special. And the question is asked concerning her, who is this? Who is this? I believe that question is asked with a tone of puzzlement, a tone of wonder, a tone of astonishment. They look at her and they see something very strange. She doesn't fit in with their lifestyle. She's mystifying. Perhaps there's even a tone of anger in this question. Who is this? The question is asked because she is so different than her surroundings. She doesn't blend in with her surroundings. She's different. We read in Matthew 16:18 when Jesus designated His church as my church. Those two words set it apart from all others. My church. The Lord's churches are set apart from the policies and the philosophies and the reasonings and the manners and the values and the loyalties and the goals and the pursuits of both the secular and the religious world. They're set apart. And they are to be noticeably so. Never is she to blend in with the wilderness. She's different. In this day of seeker-friendly and seeker-sensitive churches, when the emphasis is upon giving the people what they want and what is pleasing to their sinful flesh, and in line with their perceived needs and in line with their twisted and perverted notions of God, and all of this, of course, has resulted in churches being nothing more than places of entertainment and social gatherings built upon the sands of demographic studies. Corporation marketing strategies, pop psychology concepts. You know, all these churches that have been closed down since March, you would think it would cross someone's mind, what are we even here for? How relevant are we? We can be closed down since March and nothing's changed. I mean, to me, it's the Lord saying, you're irrelevant. Wake up. You're irrelevant. It doesn't matter if you're open or closed. But the Lord established His churches to be separate, to be different from the ways and the reasonings and the ideas and the teachings and the pursuits of the religious and the secular world. And such is maintained, and when such is maintained, secularism, so-called Christendom, will look at the Lord's churches with great amazement and wonder, saying, who is this? Who is this? Who is this that preaches this book? Who in the world is this? Who is this that believes in the divine authority and the absolute sovereignty and the all-sufficiency of this book? Who is this that declares God as He is revealed in this book? Who is this that declares man as he is revealed in this book? Who is this that is so narrow as to what constitutes a church? Who is this? Who is this that insists on things being done according to this book? Who is this that still sings the old songs of faith? Who is this? She's very strange to the religious and secular world. Who is this that is so detached from that which is considered mainstream in Christendom? Who is this? Who is this that draws and insists upon a clear distinction between truth and error, between holy and unholy, between the sacred and the profane? Who is this that still denounces sin as sin? Who is this that's not going along with the redefining and the justifying and the minimizing of sin? Who is this that insists men be men and women be women and men dress like men and women dress like women? Who is this? So you hear them as they look at her. Who is this? And that serves as a reminder of what we as individuals and collectively as Home Baptist Church should be in the present and into the future until Jesus comes. Things get progressively worse. The distinction ought to be more and more clear all the time that we're different individually, collectively. Notice, thirdly, this woman is moving in a specific direction in the picture. It says, "Who is this that cometh?" Describing her present and continual movement, cometh. "Who is this that cometh up?" Okay, now we're getting to the direction of her movement. She cometh up from, out of, the wilderness. So as you look at this picture, this woman is moving. She's moving in a specific direction. She's leaving. She's coming up from the wilderness. So as you look at this picture, you can see others in the picture. They are snuggled in the wilderness. They're comfortable there. But she's different. She's not snuggled in the wilderness. She's moving. As you look at others in the picture, they are identified by the wilderness, not her. She's leaving the wilderness. She's ascending from the wilderness. She's gaining in altitude. And this is all very mystifying and strange to the people of the wilderness. As you follow this woman through Song of Solomon, she's been looked upon as unattractive and repulsive. She's been reviled. She's been ridiculed. She's been cursed. She's been slandered. She's been battered. She's been bruised. She's been knocked down. But look at her in the picture. Look at her. She's not defeated. She's coming up from the wilderness. Notice she's not being dragged or going further into the wilderness. She's not being dragged into the wilderness by the religious or the secular world. And she's not willfully just going into the wilderness. She's not embracing the wilderness. She's not distracted by the wilderness. She's not stuck there. She's not entangled. She's not overcome. She's not held down by the wilderness. No, no, no. She's coming out of the wilderness. Notice, it is present tense. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? She's becoming more and more distinct from the wilderness. She's becoming more and more in contrast to the wilderness. And the fact that she is coming up from the wilderness is victory. See the picture. She's moving. She's not stuck. She's not stopped by the wilderness. But she's rising victoriously above all the dungeons. There's many a dungeon in this wilderness. She's rising victoriously above all the traps, and there's many traps. She's rising victoriously above all the giants and the obstacles and the barriers of the wilderness. The wilderness has not stopped her. But she is rising victoriously above that wilderness that is saturated and permeated with the vileness and the wickedness and the ungodliness and the blasphemy and the heresy and the foolishness of the secular and religious world. She's not stopped by the wilderness. She has not been duped and spellbound with the agenda and the philosophies of the wilderness. No, she's coming up from the wilderness. She's not stopped by it. She's not clinging to it. She's not clinging to the lies of the wilderness. She's coming up from the wilderness. Look at her. Look at the picture. Observe her. She's rising victoriously over a diabolical world in the very sphere of rebellion against God. She's not stopped by the crowd in that wilderness. She's not stopped by the godless, the God-despising, and the blasphemous, immoral, permissive, self-indulgent, self-sufficient society and culture that she lives in. But she's rising victoriously above it all. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness? She's not stuck in the mire of the devilish thinking, ways, and pursuits of the wilderness. Again, the picture serves as a reminder of the direction that we as individuals and collectively should be moving right now and into the future until Jesus comes. That is to be the direction that I move individually, that you move individually, and collectively. Fourthly, notice the company that she keeps. It's not just her in the picture. She's not alone. She has company. She's with somebody. Who is she with? Her beloved. Her beloved. I see that as Christ. Throughout the Song of Solomon, she refers to him as her beloved. And it speaks of the loving relationship that they have. She is addressing him as, when she does so, she's addressing him as the love of her life. She's in love with him. And she is not ashamed to be identified with the very one the world hates. She's not ashamed. Her heart is taken with him. It's a love that boils over. It is a love that filled her with excitement. She's in love with him. And she's with him. If we're going to come up from the wilderness, we have to be deeply in love with him. It is a love that wants, that longs to be more committed and surrendered to him. Do you love him enough to be committed to him? Do you love him enough to surrender all to him? I get a little tired of people telling me how they love the Lord, and I know they don't. Do you love him enough to commit your life and surrender your will to him? It is a love that wants to be more controlled and dominated by him. It is a love that wants to follow him. And he's coming up from the wilderness. It is a love that wants to obey him. It is a love that puts him first above all. It is a love that wants to glorify him. It is a love that wants to please him in all things. It's a love that's willing to stoop. A love that makes him the priority and the purpose of our life. It is a love that is attracted to him. We got a lot of God's people who supposedly are in love with the Lord, but their attraction is to the world. You tell me that you love your wife, but you're attracted to the woman down the street, you've got a problem. You've got a problem. And God's people today want to talk about how much they love the Lord, but their attraction is in this world. That's a problem. It is a love that is drawn to him. Just drawn to him. There's a lot in this wilderness. He's separate from the wilderness, and this love is drawn to him. It makes you sensitive toward him. If you love someone, you're sensitive to their feelings. You have a sensitivity. It's a love that talks to him. And even more importantly, it's a love that listens to him. If you love someone, you will listen to them. I didn't say you'd agree with them. You will listen to them. Again, the picture serves as a reminder to us individually and collectively. Be identified with Christ. Be identified with Christ. Keep company with Christ. The fifth thing we notice about this picture is her posture. It says that she's leaning upon her beloved. That's her position. She's near him. And her posture in relation to Christ. She's leaning upon her beloved. May I say that explains why she's able to ascend above the wilderness. She's leaning upon her beloved. People talk all the time, we don't want to get ahead of the Lord, we don't want to get behind the Lord. Well, there's a solution to both of those problems. Lean upon Him. Lean upon Him. You're going at the same pace. You don't have to worry about getting ahead if you're leaning. You don't have to worry about getting behind if you're leaning. Lean. Leaning upon her beloved. This explains also how she's able to maintain her identity. She's leaning. It speaks of His presence. As we've said many times, you can't lean on something unless it's there. It also speaks of His nearness. You can't lean upon something, it has to be there and it has to be near. If I'm going to lean on something, it cannot be more than 5'8" from me. Because that's how tall I am. It can't be further than that. This leaning means that she has shifted her weight from self to Him. That's what we do when we lean. We shift our weight from ourselves to whatever we're leaning upon. And she's leaning upon her beloved. Why? Because she knows that He's able to bear her weight. I'm not going to lean on a piece of cardboard or a piece of paper. You lean on something that you are very confident this is going to hold my weight. She's leaning upon Him because she knows He's able. That makes it a position of confidence, a position of trust, a position of dependence. She's leaning upon her beloved. She's cast herself upon Him. She's joined to Him. She's associated with Him. She's cleaving to Him. She's leaning upon her beloved. Why? Because she knows the journey is long. And she won't make it on her own. So she leans upon Him. She leans upon Him because she knows the road is perilous. And He knows where He's going. She leans upon Him because she knows she's weak. And she's unable. She's leaning upon her beloved. Someone say, well, if you lean upon the Lord, that's weakness. Praise the Lord. When I'm weak, then I'm strong. When I'm weak, then I'm strong. Because when I'm weak, I have enough sense to lean upon the Lord. Leaning upon the Lord, she's strengthening herself in Him. She's strengthening herself in Him. She's experiencing His maintaining, sustaining power. She's experiencing His help. What better way to live? Leaning upon her beloved. Again, she's identifying herself with Him. She cometh. And she cometh up from the wilderness, and as she does, she's moving in the same direction and pace as He. That's the only way you can come up from the wilderness. You have to move in the same direction as Him, and the same pace. Wherever He's going, she's going. She's leaning upon her beloved. Wherever He goes, that's where I want to go. That's her attitude. She's leaning upon her beloved. Where do you think her mind is as she's leaning upon her beloved? I believe it's upon Him. She's leaning upon her beloved. This says something about Him. It says that He's real. You can't, don't try to lean on something that's not real. You're going to fall. Does it not also suggest that he's approachable? He's approachable. He's a sympathizing, practical, and relevant friend who is near. And he's willing to take a part with us. He's willing to let us lean upon him. Again, it's present tense. And I believe she's leaning more and more heavily each step of the way. Each step of the way, she's leaning more heavily. Here we are in this world. We've been here for some time now, most of us. By now, hopefully you've seen that the road is long. The road is perilous, filled with traps. You know what? I think I need to lean even more heavily upon him each and every day. Well, I've learned a lot. I can maybe not lean so much. You're a fool. You're going to fall. The longer we live, the more heavily we ought to be leaning upon him. And I believe that's the picture that we get here. What a wonderful and privileged position to lean upon the Lord. This is always to be a current picture of you and I, individually, leaning upon the Lord. This is always to be a current picture of Home Baptist Church. This is to be a current picture of you and I individually as we go into the future, until Jesus comes, leaning upon the Lord, and collectively as well. And then lastly, she has a testimony. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness leaning upon her beloved? They noticed, couldn't help but notice, that she was different. Who is this? You're different. Don't be ashamed to be different. If you're a child of God, God made you different. Don't be ashamed as a church to be different. She had this testimony. She's different. They also noticed that she was ascending above the world. This is her testimony. She doesn't have to speak a word. They can see she's different. They can see she's ascending. They noticed that she has confidence in her beloved. She has a dependence upon him because she's leaning upon him. What a testimony. They have confidence in the Lord. They are depending upon the Lord. They noticed her love for him. Her beloved. Her beloved. So this is her testimony. They noticed all of these things about her. But what is the most important thing they noticed? It wasn't the wilderness. It wasn't even her. It was her beloved. Looking at her, they could not help but see him. Because that's where she lived. When they saw her, they saw him. What a testimony. People look at us, they ought to see Christ. People look at Home Baptist Church, they ought to see Christ. They see us, they see Christ. What a testimony. And again, that should be so of us individually. And it should be so of us collectively, and it cannot be collectively if it is not individually. So we have to ask, as you look at this picture, it's a beautiful picture. It's a very instructive picture. Can you see yourself in the picture? Can you see the setting of the wilderness? Can you see yourself in that wilderness? Leaning upon Him. Coming up, not going down into, not snuggled into, but coming up from the wilderness. How much does our life correspond to the picture? Who is this? Who is this? Leaning upon our beloved. Coming up from the wilderness. Can you see yourself in that picture? Do you know what the picture's talking about? Can you identify? God help us. Or Larry, if you come and lead us in verse song. Let's all stand.